Tired of sugar-coated news and corporate spin? Check out The Nicole Sandler Show, speaking truth to power with the irreverence it deserves. Smart, fearless, and just the right amount of snark, Nicole breaks down the headlines, exposes the hypocrisy, and talks with the people working for real change. Weekdays at 3 Eastern, noon Pacific on Progressive Voices, NicoleSandler.com, Substack, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't just get the news, get the truth.
How has Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. affected our public health? Rebecca Parks from Protect Our Care has the details. Welcome to Care Talk Live, where we talk about how healthcare works or doesn't work in America and get you answers. I'm Laura Packard, cancer survivor and healthcare advocate, here to help you. Please text or call in your health insurance and healthcare questions at 202-838-6837, and our experts will answer them in future episodes. Be sure to subscribe to my channel or podcast wherever you get your podcasts to get future Care Talk shows. In today's episode, we're talking about the changes to public health in America over the past year under RFK Jr. So welcome to Rebecca Parks, the Research Director for Protect Our Care.
Hello, it's good to be back.
So you're back to talk about public health again, and a brand new report that Protect Our Care has released about the state of public health in America over the past year. What are some important things that people should know?
Sure. I'm sad to say that this week marks 1 year since RFK Jr. was confirmed and sworn in as HHS Secretary, and I think it is safe to say that over the course of this year, he has been a wrecking ball for American public health. His tenure has really been defined by chaos, mass firings, weaponized incompetence, and this deliberate effort to turn our trusted public health agencies into engines of anti-vaccine and anti-science propaganda. His anti-vaccine agenda is completely in motion. He broke all of the promises that he made to Senator Bill Cassidy and others on the health committee that got him confirmed. He's completely hollowed out all of the infrastructure that makes vaccination easy and routine for families and for Americans. It's been a disaster across HHS and the CDC and the FDA, all of which are under RFK's umbrella. He and Trump have basically purged all of the scientific experts. They've stacked the advisory boards with cranks. They've slashed research. They've canceled life-saving clinical trials, and they've sabotaged even the basic tools like vaccines.gov, which tells you where you can get vaccines near you. And just created total chaos. And so they started straight out of the gate a year ago by firing tens of thousands of staff at HHS. And then the subsequent 12 months have been this whiplash of fired and then rehired. Grants have been cut. Grants have been restored. There's hollowed out NIH that currently has half of its institute directorships vacant, and they're trying to hire people. And as all of this is happening, we've just seen this massive increase in preventable infectious disease. We know measles had tens of thousands of cases in the US last year, the most that we've had since measles was declared eliminated in this country about 25 years ago. We are almost certainly going to lose that designation of a measles elimination country later this year. We saw two deaths of children from measles in Texas early last year. And all of this is while RFK is really leaning in on anti-vaccine propaganda, just like many of us warned that he would do before he got confirmed. He has stocked the key advisory committees with anti-vaccine activists. They recently slashed the childhood vaccine schedule and are just creating all of this chaos about what vaccines are good to get for your children and your family. You know, it's a basically a choose your own adventure now, instead of getting clear guidance from the CDC about, you know, the safety and efficacy of all of these vaccines. And instead of promoting vaccination to end the measles outbreaks, RFK goes on TV and he promotes cod liver oil and vitamin A as treatment for the measles. And it's just this perfect storm of war on vaccines and having devastating results we've seen all across the country. And it's not just vaccines, you know, he's also canceled just millions and millions of dollars worth of research at NIH and NSF, including halting clinical trials that were in midstream that have affected tens of thousands of people who were potentially going to receive life-saving treatment for various conditions like cancer and chronic diseases. And they've really especially targeted anything that you can peg as DEI or, you know, equity, women's health, LGBTQ plus care, and then at the same time promoting a lot of really kooky conspiracy theories, you know, that Tylenol causes autism, that fluoride is a dangerous thing that you know, no one should have. It's just really systematically dismantling the science and the programs that have kept people healthy and alive in this country. And I guess kind of the last piece of this is I really want to emphasize that none of this is popular. You know, I think there was a lot of concern when RFK was confirmed that he had all of these MAHA moms and, you know, people behind him that were really supporting him. But what he's actually done in office has proven to be incredibly unpopular. He's got cratering confidence in federal health leadership. He's the least popular person in Donald Trump's cabinet, which is a really impressive achievement. And large majorities are continuing to side with routine child vaccination and vaccine research. You know, his whole tenure has just been this vivid warning label about what happens when you hand over the keys to America's public health infrastructure to an anti-vaccine ideologue with no science or medical background, and you get chaos, cuts, conspiracy theories, and more sickness and preventable deaths for people in this country.
Well, that's a cheerful report. And unfortunately, it does not look like Trump has lost any faith in RFK Jr. So we are likely to continue to see more of this this year and going on. So what, if anything, can people do about this? I mean, it feels sometimes pretty hopeless that all of these cuts are happening and we have to deal with the effects of measles spreading in my community, the scientists losing their jobs and future cures not happening. So what can people do? Can people do anything?
Sure. And I would say the first thing is we have seen that attention and shame is still effective. There were a lot of cuts and firings that when word got out that they were going to, you know, cut hundreds of millions of dollars from mental health grants, people didn't like that. People spoke out and they reversed those cuts within, you know, hours to days. It was very fast. And we've seen a lot of institutions and officials speaking out against this and having some success at moving the needle back. You know, we've seen the American Academy of Pediatrics is really going to war against RFK over cutting the childhood vaccine schedule and taking him to court and really pushing back on all of this. And so, and we've also seen some members of Congress, Republican members of Congress, start to show a little bit more spine. And so, you know, making sure that your member of Congress knows that you don't support these cuts to NIH and you don't support these crazy changes to the vaccine schedule is another thing that we can do to continue to keep the pressure on these people. They do pay attention to, you know, what people are saying and what people are really pushing back on.
Mm-hmm. And I think the rise of RFK Jr. and the whole wellness influencer grifter industry is speaking to real issues people have with our medical establishment. You know, people are underinsured, uninsured, or have insurance but can't get good care, or you get assembly line care where the doctor just sees you for a minute and you're out the door and you still have questions or concerns or things that medicine hasn't answered yet. So I think that these folks were speaking to a real need, but they're taking advantage of people who have this need to peddle their own untested supplements that make people money, their own anti-vax agenda, which again puts more money in their pockets. People in need are being taken advantage of. Can you talk more about how this is not popular? So it could be that people with real concerns are starting to see that these folks in charge are not answering those concerns.
Sure. And I think one of the reasons that Kennedy was as popular as he was initially is because, yes, he is speaking to real concern about what's in the food that we eat and, you know, medicine not being responsive to what people need. But I think when people have seen what he has actually done with the position and the trust that they have given him, they've been really unhappy about it. 50% of registered voters disapprove of RFK Jr.'s leadership at HHS. It's almost unheard of for any cabinet secretary to have that kind of disapproval approval rating. And, you know, you talk to people and they are interested in some of the moves he's made on food and nutrition, but they're very, very concerned about the amount that he has focused on vaccines and things that are broadly popular and really supported by the general public. And to that extent, I think he is taking advantage of some of his supporters who put their trust in him and like believed that he was going to make changes to the things they were concerned about and not, you know, spend all this time yelling about Tylenol and 5G wireless signals is also something that he has been very interested in, you know, proving that they're dangerous somehow.
Yeah. And this is a missed opportunity for RFK Jr. and for the Trump administration. They could have focused in on food and nutrition where there's bipartisan concern. You know, they could have done work that would not have been controversial and maybe would have been a little kooky, like his obsession with beef tallow, be doing the harm of his anti-vax crusade. So again, if RFK Jr. was a different person, if he wasn't stubborn and resistant to scientific research, anything that contradicts what he personally believes, he just doesn't, he will die on that hill to defend bad science because it aligns with his thinking. But yeah, this could have gone differently, but he is who he is, and he is who we were saying he was for the past couple years before he was even put into power.
We cannot say that we didn't warn people on this. And I will say, just this morning, I was watching RFK did a fireside chat with the Heritage Foundation celebrating his first year in office, and he said explicitly in this chat that he just could not believe he was so grateful to Donald Trump because Donald Trump let him do things that nobody else would let him do. So that is, you know, how we got where we are is that Donald Trump said he would let RFK Jr. quote, run wild on Americans' health. And that's now here we are a year later.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, Rebecca Parks from Protect Our Care.
Thank you so much.
And now our experts will answer your health insurance questions. So welcome to Louise Norris, health insurance and healthcare reform analyst at healthinsurance.org, and Diane Archer, founder of Just Care and senior advisor on Medicare to Social Security Works. So let's start. Louise, is there any news or updates on the Affordable Care Act subsidies, which is something that we've talked about on many shows? They went away, and now Affordable Care Act health insurance plans are less affordable for everybody. Is there any update from Congress on that?
So unfortunately, the subsidy enhancements did expire at the end of 2025, and the talks about reviving those subsidy enhancements do seem to have stalled at this point. That doesn't mean they couldn't come up again later in the year. Basically, just to reiterate really quickly, the House had passed a measure that would have just extended them temporarily, but would have extended them again. And the Senate did not take up that bill. Instead, some senators proposed a different idea that was sort of a compromise, but would have had a lot of harmful effects as well. And that hasn't gone anywhere. And as of last week, it sounded like in the Senate, at least, the talks on this issue had stalled. The issue could come back up again later in the year, because it is important to note that enrollment, so open enrollment has ended nationwide at this point for 2026. And we don't have final numbers yet for every state, but the preliminary numbers looks like about 1.3 million fewer people enrolled for 2026 compared with 2025 because of this affordability. You know, the plans became less affordable. And some folks, you know, in like Dr. Oz was saying that this is, you see, saying basically it's not as bad as everyone was predicting, because like the CBO had said 4 million fewer enrollees. But it's really important to understand that CBO was talking about effectuated enrollments, which is where people actually have paid their premiums and their coverage is in force. We won't have those numbers for months and months yet. All we have right now is just the basic numbers of how many people selected a plan during open enrollment. And that includes millions of people whose coverage was just automatically renewed. Whether or not those folks can actually afford that plan and continue to pay their premiums this year remains to be seen, but we won't have those numbers until, we won't even start to get those numbers until the summer, like July, and that will just be preliminary as well for the first couple months of the year. So it is possible, depending on how those numbers start to look as time goes on, that this issue could come back up again in Congress, because we will definitely see a drop off in effectuated enrollment that's much more significant than that initial 1.3 million fewer enrollees. So stay tuned, I guess, that's the message we've been saying for months and months. As of right now, those subsidy enhancements are gone, but Congress could consider them again, could consider them for next year. It's possible. We just won't know for quite some time. Although open enrollment is over, Connecticut and Illinois both have some special enrollment opportunities right now. Connecticut, it's for folks who are eligible for the new state subsidies that Connecticut debuted for 2026 to try to offset some of the affordability issues. And then for Illinois, what they've done is, because Illinois switched from using healthcare.gov to their own platform, Get Covered Illinois, this year. And so everyone who had Illinois coverage last year through healthcare.gov got a link basically to claim their account on Get Covered Illinois. If you haven't claimed that yet and your coverage just auto-renewed for 2026, they have opened a special enrollment period for those folks going through March 31st, where they can go in and look and see and maybe pick a different plan for 2026. And then there are always all the normal special enrollment periods that people can qualify for. So, that is still a possibility depending on your circumstances. If you are a little over 400% of the poverty level and you've got a marketplace plan, but you're paying full price for it, just know that if you make contributions to a health savings account, if you're eligible, or if you contribute to a pre-tax retirement account, those will reduce your income, could potentially make you eligible for subsidies. But all in all, it is a tough situation for folks just because the affordability did decrease so much for 2026.
Thank you, Louise. And next we have a question from Stephanie from Facebook, who says that my Social Security is $750, I assume, a month, and they'll charge $250 for Medicare. So I'll only have $500 a month to live on. What can I do? So Diane, do you have any thoughts?
Lots of thoughts always, Laura. The situation for everyone in this country is really dire when it comes to healthcare affordability, right? We just heard from Louise about the lack of affordability for people in the health insurance exchange just to pay the premium. And for people with Medicare, I think that is increasingly a struggle as well. And that's just paying the premium. Of course, once you've paid your premium, you then have to pay cost sharing, and as a general proposition. And a lot of people end up foregoing care or incurring enormous medical debt in order to get care. And neither one of those scenarios is ideal either. In fact, it's just inexcusable that the richest country in the world should have so many of its citizens in such, you know, a bind when it comes to healthcare costs. So Stephanie, you're not alone. I'm very sorry that you're struggling with these costs. And it is the case that most people with Medicare now spend at least $2,500 a year on Medicare Part B and Part D premiums. And then they're still left to pay for coinsurance, deductibles, and out-of-pocket costs. It's just too much money. So what can you do? Well, anybody who's struggling should check with their state Medicaid office to see if they qualify for Medicaid or a Medicare savings program. Stephanie, if your income is $750 a month and that's your only income, you very well will qualify for Medicaid, and that would pay your premium and your cost sharing for Medicare. If your income is up to 135% of the federal poverty level, but above 100%, you still could qualify for a Medicare savings program, which will pay your Medicare premium. For Medicaid, your assets need to be under $9,950 a year. But even if your savings are higher than that, you should check with your Medicaid office to see whether you might qualify, because certain assets are excluded. And even in many states, certain income, a substantial income, can be excluded depending upon where you live. So where does that leave us? I think it leaves us as a country with a big question as to whether or not we should be continuing to rely on the current system, or whether we need a new system, which is tax-based, which we have in many, many other countries, that guarantees healthcare to everyone based on their income and makes it affordable for the most part for everyone. So we need a new healthcare system. That is very clear, because too many people are struggling not only to get insurance, but then to get care with insurance. They're underinsured. And then to deal with medical debt when they don't have the money that's needed, but they go and get the care that they should have.
Thank you, Diane. Next, a comment from the Formula Mom on Threads, who said that for 2 years, my insurance covered my birth control at $25 a month. Suddenly this month, it's no longer covered. The script didn't change. My insurance plan didn't change. And now it's $500 a month. My OBGYN called it into some random independent pharmacy an hour away, and they're going to ship it to me for $10 a month out of pocket. So Louise, can you talk about health insurance and birth control?
Yes, absolutely. And I think the first question a lot of folks might have when they see this person's comment is, well, I thought birth control was free under the Affordable Care Act. And so a couple of really important caveats there. First of all, if your health plan is grandfathered, which means it was in effect back when the ACA was signed into law in 2010, which is still the case for some employer-sponsored plans that have just been around for a long time. If your plan is grandfathered, it's not subject to that rule at all. So it doesn't have to cover contraception at all and doesn't have to cover it for free. Also, if your plan is not subject to the Affordable Care Act, so if you have something like short-term health insurance or a healthcare sharing ministry plan or a fixed indemnity plan, something that isn't, health insurance under the Affordable Care Act, it's not subject to that rule. But most plans, including employer-sponsored plans and plans that people purchase on their own, are subject to this Affordable Care Act rule that requires them to cover contraception with no cost sharing, meaning you don't pay anything for it, but they only have to cover one of each type of contraception. And the FDA does divide, there's lots of different types of contraception, like within the contraceptive pills, there's different, you know, there's some that only have one hormone, some that have multiple hormones. There's IUDs, there's IUDs with hormones. There's, you know, so they divide them into types. And within each type, each health plan has to cover one with no cost sharing. But if you don't have to use the one that is covered with no cost sharing. So your plan could still have cost sharing for other birth control, even though some is covered for free. So that is just a thing where if you want the free birth control, you do need to make sure you understand what is actually covered by your plan with no cost sharing. So there's that aspect of it. But then to get to this person's comment, I know they said their plan didn't change, but it sounds like something changed with their plan, and it could have been a network change. It could just, I mean, it sounds like the, you know, the provider found a different pharmacy that was covering this, this birth control for much, much cheaper, whereas it sounds like they were going to have to pay full price through the pharmacy they normally use. That could just be a change in the provider network that the health plan has. So even though, you know, you keep the same health plan, that plan can make changes from one year to the next. And those changes can involve a change to the provider network, can also involve moving a drug from one tier to another. So you might be keeping the same plan from one year to the next, but your drug that you're on goes from being a tier two drug to a tier four drug. And so even though you still have, you know, technically the same insurance, your out-of-pocket costs change significantly. So that's where every year, you know, health insurance, the pharmacy you use and the coverage you have is not a set it and forget it thing. You do need to check every year, because it sounds like in this case, I mean, it's great that the provider found a different pharmacy that would work. But anytime you see a change like that, where your medication suddenly becomes much more expensive, and this isn't just birth control, this is any drug. If your medication becomes more expensive, it could be that it's your health plan moved it into a different tier, could be that the provider network changed and you need to go to a different pharmacy or explore the mail order pharmacy options. So this is, you know, great work to the provider for finding this. But yeah, it's just a thing to be aware of, that this can happen with any type of medication. So just always be shopping to see if maybe you can get your medication through your insurance at a better price by using a different pharmacy.
Thank you, Louise. And thank you, everybody, for joining us today to learn more about the changes to public health in America over the past year and how it affects you. Please text or call in your health insurance and healthcare questions at 202-838-6837, and we'll answer them in future episodes. Join us next week for more on healthcare in America. Be sure to subscribe to my channel or podcast wherever get you your podcasts. My name is Laura Packard, and this is Care Talk.
History is messy. It's weird, wild, and anything but boring. Rainy Day Rabbit Holes is a history podcast about unhinged stories that make you stop and ask, wait, is this real life?
From crazy disasters and tasty scandals to enlightening and surprising heartwarming tales, we explore the moments where people behave badly and sometimes beautifully.
We've got naughty politicians, cultural chaos, and a deep love for the Pacific Northwest, including Bigfoot.
It's thoughtful, irreverent, occasionally serious, and always entertaining.
Let's fall down the rabbit hole. MSW Media.